The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Really like our guest lineup today. Not that there are days where I sit here and say, but like what we have on board. Bob Herrig will be with us, ESPN senior golf analyst. He is at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin. It is Ryder Cup week. We're going to go right there to the Ryder Cup today. Everything about Koepka versus DeChambeau, the course, the wind, the European team with Paddy Harrington and Steve Stricker, the layout of the course, everything with Bob Herrig right there on the site at the Ryder Cup. We get you ready for that big sports weekend ahead. Fabs is with us. Michael Fabiano, senior draft analyst, Hall of Famer with SiriusXM and also SI.com. Fabs running through the fantasy football mailbag as we do that every week. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate Jeff Mishi and their support. I watched some of the Packers lines. I watched Eli and Peyton's show last night. Was it just me? I mean, there were some moments that were pretty good. Pat McAfee was funny. Gronk was funny. Brett Favre, they had a hard time getting him connected. So I actually, the person who runs this house and tells me what to do, that's why we've been married for 33 years, said, we have to get off of this. I hate Eli because he snubbed the Chargers. I can't watch him. Please get it over to normal Monday Night Football. And we did. And Aaron Rodgers went out and did what Aaron Rodgers is supposed to do. And Aaron Jones went crazy. And it was fine enough. I mean, the Lions just feel like a team every year. It's the same sort of deal, doesn't it? If you're a Lions fan, you just have to put up with it. So there's that. And looking ahead to the Cardinals now. So the Cardinals are going to be in Jacksonville this Sunday morning. It's a 10 a.m. kick. That means you're going to hear a lot about body clocks and is it really that hard of an adjustment? Are the Cardinals going to be ready to play? And I think it's very fair to wonder if they're going to be flat for this game on Sunday. I do. You know, it's a game that they should take care of business. But there's a few things at play here. One is they play Jacksonville, who's 0-2, and the Cardinals should very well be 1-1, but they're not. That's just the way it works in the NFL. You have to have some luck along the way. I think the Cardinal defense trying to get after Trevor Lawrence, at some point he's going to figure it out. I don't believe it's going to be this week. But here's the thing. So the Cardinals have the Rams and the 49ers in back-to-back weeks after this game. And so while Cliff Kingsbury's team is at 2-0, this is one of those games where if you're not ready to play as a trap game and you've got these NFC games in front of you, the NFC West is 7-1 now. Other than Seattle gagging away a lead at home and losing in overtime to Tennessee, 7-1. And they're going to start beating up on each other. And so, yeah, Kyler has played like an MVP candidate. There's no question about it. Here's one for you. If at the start of the season I said to you a couple weeks back, by the way, David Carr is going to be an MVP candidate, you would be like, what? No, not happening. But Kyler Murray is going to be an MVP candidate. Well, maybe. And yeah, he's made some just simply amazing, stunning throws and plays with his legs. And he's played great. He really has. But the facts are they should be 1-1. Facts are they're not. And so they go to Jacksonville. And if you win in Jacksonville, as you're supposed to, 3-0 with the Rams and 49ers in back-to-back weeks, this city will be on its ear. In fact, I already think there's a little bit of that going on, that people just expect the Cardinals to go down there and take care of business. We'll see. You know, a 25-point win over Tennessee, and then Tennessee goes up to Seattle. I think it speaks to that's not a bad team that they beat up on. So it was just weird in week two. I think it, again, goes back to no main players were on the field in games, scrimmages, or organized taking money from fans in August. And so we have to play catch up here a little bit the first 2 weeks. Really looking forward to this weekend, though, when you see some of the matchups and the Rams and Tampa Bay this weekend. That's going to be something else among many, many, many great games. I think on the college front, this is really a put-up, shut-up week for Arizona State. You know, they haven't had a victory over a good opponent yet. They were so bad up at BYU, and all they can do is say, we're going to stop all the penalties. Now, really, let's be serious here. You had 7 false start penalties. 7. And they're not going to be able to blame the crowd because I don't think there's going to be a big crowd there. There might be 45,000 fans. And so that's out the window. They simply can't have that many penalties again. So anything's going to be better if they cut it in half. Remember, it wasn't just 16 penalties. It was 19 penalties total, three that were they said we don't want. If they get it down to 9, that's still way too many. But as bad as it was last week, it's unrealistic to think that the Sun Devils are going to show up on Saturday night and they're going to cut their penalties down to 3, 4, or 5, a manageable number. It's unrealistic. As undisciplined as they've been, and they're next to last or last in the country in total penalties, you don't just sit there and flip a switch on that stuff. So I was at a place yesterday. I go to a meetup on Mondays. And it's filled with big cigars from Arizona State. These are people that have written checks where the decimal point is way down the line. These are people that they wear the maroon socks up to their knees and the gold shorts down past their ankles. They're those guys. Nothing wrong with that. They can tell you all day long about Bill Kajikawa and Frank Kush and the history and the heritage and how they went to school there at that time. It's great. I love going there. They like having me show up. I just kind of sit there. I don't force my opinions on anybody. I just kind of hear what's going on. There's a lot of business that happens. It's a cool place to be. But yesterday it was, hey, Brad, do you have a minute? Hey, Brad, do you have a minute? And it's, so what do you think? And when someone says to you, what do you think? It means they're going to tell me what they think eventually, okay? And I'm just telling you that these loyal Sun Devils are getting very tired of a program that is 4 games over .500 under Herm. And I've had some people that said, you know, Herm's good for you guys. He is. He's great. But at the end of the day, it is about W's and L's. And when you have 18 wins and 14 losses, and you lose the way that you lost the other night, in a year where all I've heard about, oh, we're going to be the greatest. You watch. You disrespecting us. Like, I'm not. Just prove it. I'm tired of going to El Paso. I'm tired of canceling flights to Las Vegas. And so if they don't show up and play well, a clean, crisp performance against Colorado. Just give me a clean, crisp performance. Because we're not going to learn much off of this game. You're supposed to win. Colorado's offense is not good. And then you have to go to UCLA. And then you have Stanford. All right. See where things are. Because if you win, if you just keep stacking up victories against quality opponents, then nobody's going to say a word. There'll be those who will come out of the woods and say, see, I told you so. You're so negative. You just hate. No. And life's too short for that stuff. Meantime, the mighty Wildcats. I don't know how you do it. If you're an U of A fan, God bless you. Because you've lost 15 games in a row. And you have Oregon and UCLA up the next couple weeks. I really don't know how you do it. I like how Jed Fish went in and said, you know, we're going to recruit local. I like that. The local recruit is not the reason why they keep losing games. They just simply haven't been together long enough, one, and two, they don't have enough talent top to bottom. It's not that hard. I guess an NAU coach screamed in the press box, this is why we own the state of Arizona. I saw that printed today. The Associated Press reported that. That's a little much, you know. It's great that you're playing well. I like what Chris Ball is doing. I like Chris Ball. But for someone to say this is why we own the state of Arizona, come on. I don't think you need to go down that path. A jubilant moment for NAU and great for them. But now do you turn back around and flip the page? We're Tuesday now. 24-48-hour rule. Enjoy the victory and then it's over. Get on to next week. And, you know, to that end, looking at both teams this week, if U of A goes up there and gets absolutely destroyed in a team that quits before it even gets on the plane against the Ducks, what does that say about where Jed Fish is? If Arizona State comes back out and has double digits in penalties and struggles against Colorado, what does that say where Herm is? So, yeah, it's only coming in towards the end of September, But these are two huge games this week. Huge games. If a team is asleep at the switch, like Arizona State was the other night up at Provo, they can say all day long it was loud. Yeah, guess what? That's college football. Deal with it. Don't make excuses. Turn the page. If they come out and they're not ready to play again, then Ray's got to seriously look at what's going on. Or Michael Crow. We'll just go above Ray on this one. So I'm really interested on both teams' fronts because there's a lot at stake. President Robbins down there has got to kind of look around at what's going on with his football hire. It's one thing to lose and to try to figure it out. That's part of it. When you take over the worst program in America, which U of A was and is, Kevin Sumlin completely destroyed that program. And yet, there's some Sun Devil alums out there and big boosters that wanted Kevin Sumlin at Arizona State, and it didn't happen. And thank God for that. Look at the mess they're in down there. So both teams this weekend I'm looking forward to. Notre Dame-Wisconsin is a game I'm looking forward to seeing this weekend. Notre Dame is sitting there. I don't know if they're good. I don't know if they're great. Really, the college schedule for me in a couple of weeks when you have Penn State against Iowa and you see Coach Franklin and what he's doing there at Penn State and with the USC opening, and that's been a name that's been out there. The USC open job impacts other gigs. Let's just say that Herm continues to struggle as they did the other night. I'm still of the opinion at the end of the year, Herm's either going to retire or the ASU program's going to make a change. So who's out there? You just start looking around. And SC is the best job available. What else? You know, the Ryder Cup, we'll get to that here momentarily. And your hometown Heroes on the diamond last night lost their 102nd game. Just a couple more weeks of this. And I don't know where they go from there. I was talking to a broadcast executive this morning in town. And we're just like, where are they going to go next? Total misevaluation of talent and injuries, too. All right, Bob Herrig, ESPN senior golf analyst. He is terrific. He will join us next via Zoom from Whistling Straits at the Ryder Cup and then Fabs, all things fantasy football. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, as promised, it is Ryder Cup weekend. It's actually Ryder Cup week. Very much looking forward to this Friday, getting it all started at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin. I was up there during the Suns title run and took a drive up there and said, this is going to be magical. In late September, Bob Herrig, ESPN senior golf writer, who's been with us in the past. We appreciate him taking a few minutes from the press room there in Wisconsin. Just paint a picture of what it's like.
It's kind of neat to see what we have gotten used to not seeing, which is a lot of people and corporate hospitality and the things that you get used to at the big golf tournaments. You know, we've really kind of not had that so much here in the last year for obvious reasons. But they seem to have brought it back here in full force. And, you know, the build out at a Ryder Cup these days is really big, really a lot of big structures. It's just a grand scene, you know. It's a major, major event, and it's kind of cool to see that again. And you know, even early in the week, there's a pretty good little buzz.
Yeah.
You know, even though we're still a couple days away from starting, you know, there's a good number of people out there already.
Bob, you know what's interesting on my end is that COVID hit and the golf industry skyrocketed. Just right. Took off. It is right. Just gone. And I believe in just the emails that I'm getting or in conversation, there are a lot of people that are not really aware of what the Ryder Cup is all about, which is good for the game of golf that so many are coming in this week saying, okay, I've been hearing about it. I just picked this game up a year, 2 years ago. They see that the USA has lost 9 of the last 12, that they haven't had dominance. Mm-hmm. What would you say to the person who's just now finding this event?
Well, it's just such a unique event. I mean, it might be the biggest event in golf. I think the Masters has something to say about that.
Yeah.
You know, but it if it's not, it's right behind the Masters. I mean, so that means it's probably as big or bigger than the other three major championships. And I think part of the allure is it's not every year. It's every other year. And so there's a little bit of time to get ratcheted up for it. you know, to get excited about it. And it's just completely different than what we're used to seeing on a week-to-week basis. Instead of individuals, it's two teams. Instead of playing your own ball in stroke play, you might be playing your own ball in match play, but there's also a team element called foursomes or alternate shot, which these guys never play. You know, nobody plays alternate shot at the highest level of golf. Actually, at the New Orleans event, team event now, they do have an alternate shot part of that, but it's an awkward way to play. Most Americans don't play alternate shot. But that's a big part of the Ryder Cup. It's eight of the 28 points. You better do well in it. The U.S. did really bad in it in Paris 3 years ago. So, and then it's just, you know, the intensity, I think the partisanship, in golf tournaments, we're used to cheering for everyone. At the Ryder Cup, you hear boos. You hear cheering of missed shots, missed putts, poor shots, balls in the water. It's a little jarring. You know, you're not used to that. So, but when the Europeans hit a ball in the water, you're going to hear it cheered this week. And while that might be a little bit awkward, that's all part of the Ryder Cup.
ESPN's Bob Herrig, their senior golf writer, with us in the press room at Whistling Straits. The Ryder Cup gets started this Friday. The course itself, what strikes you most about Whistling Straits for this Ryder Cup? I've heard an awful lot made out of the winds. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't know where we were, you'd think we were on an ocean. You know, it's a golf course. It's right on Lake Michigan, which is obviously a huge body of water. You cannot see to the other side, and it looks like an ocean. And it can feel like you're in Ireland or Britain. The other course here is called the Irish course. So, I mean, it's sort of this whole property was sort of molded after Lynx Golf in Ireland. Yeah, it's unique. It's not your typical American style tree lined golf course. There are no trees hardly. The elements will be a factor. If the wind blows, you'll feel it. All the holes pretty much run parallel to the water. And although it's not a Lynx course in true definition, I don't think it'll be firm and fast like you'd see in Britain. The balls are going to stop on the greens, but it just has that look about it. It's got a lot of bunkers. And look, if wind is part of this, I think it negates the U.S. advantage. It's not a real home course advantage for the Americans. They don't play a tour event here every year. They have had three PGA championships here, but it's been since 2015. Only a couple of guys have played it. So, you know, I think the golf course has a chance to have an impact. Now, it's long. I think the fairways are going to be wide. That plays to the U.S. strengths. They could do things like that. I don't think you'll see a lot of rough, not terrible rough like we saw in France, which actually played to the European strengths. So golf course setup is part of the home course advantage, and they need to take advantage of it as much as they can.
When you look at the captains, Patty Harrington and Steve Stricker, the players and managing the personalities and egos, a lot's been made, obviously, about Koepka and DeChambeau. That storyline to you, is it that pronounced? Is that the overriding storyline? Is it more focused on golf? Is it just, Brad, it's Tuesday? Of course, that's going to be the overriding storyline
until
we get to Friday.
I think it's a fair thing to bring up because it's been such a contentious thing over the summer and spring.
Is it still contentious, Bob?
I mean, they are all saying the nice things.
Yeah.
I don't know that it will be an impact here. You know, the other side of that is the European harmony has always been overstated to me. They've had their share of guys who don't get along and they might not be buddies or friction, and they just put it aside this week. And it's the same for the U.S. I mean, Koepka and DeChambeau are unlikely to be partners. I mean, if they are, I think that'll be a pretty big surprise. Right. And if they're not, they're never really going to even have to be in each other's orbit, really. I don't, they're not practicing together in the same pods. So they're not going to be on the course at the same time. I mean, maybe they'll be on the range. Maybe there'll be some small talk in a team room or at a dinner or whatever, but with 12 guys and a captain and four assistants, I mean, they don't have to sit anywhere near each other. And look, even if they did, all of us have been around people we're not friendly with, or we might not get along with. And we just, there's just no interaction. I mean, they don't have to interact. So I see that as something that you wouldn't want it to be something that's blown up and becomes a problem where they're at each other this week. But as long as they're not at each other, there's no reason why it has to be of any bad influence at all.
Wasn't there a lot made about Phil and Tiger back in the day?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Phil and Tiger, for all of their differences, I think, you know, they had the one Ryder Cup where they were paired together, which turned out to, you know, in retrospect was probably a bad idea. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, they weren't like, I don't think they were going at it that week. I don't think they were purposely getting on each other's nerves to the detriment of the U.S. team. You know, they just might not have palled around together that much. But yet Tiger was going to sort of talk and hang with the guys he was closest to and Phil the same way. So, the bottom line here to me is the U.S. has been losing mostly.
Yep.
And we look for things. And the Europeans have been winning, and we look for things there. And they seem to have this bond, and they talk about this camaraderie. And frankly, I think on their side, it's overplayed. You know, I don't necessarily think that that's the reason that they win, because the guy who never, you know, the 12th player who never sees the first player has nothing to do with either one of each other. And let's be honest, except for the alternate shot part of this, you're playing your own ball. Sunday, teammates don't matter. You're still playing your own ball. You're playing against one other guy. Now, sure, it might help if you see the other guys doing well, but there's not a whole lot of team aspect to Sunday. And even in the best ball part of it, you could hate that other guy. Your whole goal then should be just make as many birdies as you can. You're playing your own ball. Yes, there is strategy. If your partner's in play, it might mean you could be more aggressive. If your partner's hit it out of bounds, well, that means you better get your tee shot in play. I mean, no matter who your partner is, that's pretty easy to figure that out. I mean, I don't think you have to be best buddies to know that, okay, my partner just hit a bad tee shot. I better get this ball in play.
Yeah, no, that's you put it right. Bob Herrick with us, ESPN senior golf writer. Last questions, a couple questions to get you out of here. And just when you look at the rosters, and for the common fan who's just coming into this, mm-hmm. player that you look at and say for either side, or maybe it's just on the USA side, this player, if this player steps up and performs, they're going to go to a different trajectory in their career. They're going to become a household name, or it's Brad, this player just needs to play well this week for the USA. They're not going to have a shot.
Yeah. I think on the US side, there's a couple of guys who sort of fit that, you know, some guys who are a little bit below the radar.
Yeah.
A guy like Scottie Scheffler. He could play with Bryson possibly. Daniel Berger, never played in a Ryder Cup before. I think those guys, certainly Harris English.
Yep.
You know, those are the kind of the guys that aren't talked about as much. And, you know, all captain's picks. Spieth was a pretty obvious captain's pick. I don't really put him in that group. But those three guys, I think, what if they just did anything? I was talking to somebody earlier about some of the European players over the years who were not highly regarded, but they made a name for themselves in the Ryder Cup by stepping up and coming through. You know, what if Scottie Scheffler, you know, was really great on Saturday and then won his singles match on Sunday, or the same with Berger? You know, I mean, it can change the perception of them. It can change their career. They don't necessarily need those guys to step up, but if they did, it could be huge, and they would be hailed. So, you know, I think the other guys, regardless of what they do, are fairly well established.
Yep.
You know, Morikawa's won two majors. No matter how he fares in this Ryder Cup, he's won two majors at age 24. You know, for all his struggles, Bryson has had a heck of a career already. Same with Koepka. Same with Dustin Johnson, Spieth, Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas might want to have a good Ryder Cup because his year's been a little bit mediocre by his standards. I think he would love to have a great Ryder Cup to sort of boost that up. And so maybe that's some incentive for him. I think you've got some guy. Scheffler's never played in a Ryder Cup or a President's Cup, and he's never won a tournament on the PGA Tour. He's in a very, very unique spot here in that he could really do something for his name because he just doesn't have the resume yet.
I'll let you go off that. Stay safe. Have fun out there. What an event. What a great time to have it. Thanks.
Very good, Brad. Thank you.
As always, there's Bob Herrick. Good to catch up with him. ESPN senior golf writer. Appreciate his time there in the press room at Whistling Straits at the Ryder Cup. And we're back with more after this time out. And as promised, it's Fabs. So here's the thing with Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer. He has told me through the years, I really want to meet Danny White. He's my hero. He's my hero. He's my hero. So I get this photo from Fabs, like a little kid. Like the kid that you see with the baseball standing along the line waiting to get it signed at 7 years of age. And he's with Danny White. So you have to just be – life's complete now, right?
It was great. And you know what? A lot of times – you know, when you meet your heroes, you're disappointed, right? You know, there's that old saying about if you want your heroes to remain your heroes, you may not want to meet them or something along those lines. Danny was awesome. He was awesome. So I was at the Cowboys Chargers game this weekend with Matthew, my son, and we were lucky enough to get into the suite that Westwood One shares, and Danny was doing the broadcast and I had no idea. So I went in there and we were checking out the suite. Matthew was all excited. And I walked past him like, that's Danny White. Like, I didn't say that out loud audibly, but like in my head.
Yeah.
And so I went up to him and I introduced myself and I said that, you know, I'm friends with you. And he made some joke, of course, because you guys are pals.
Yeah.
And then I said, Danny, can we get a picture with you and Matthew? And he said, oh, absolutely. And the first thing he does is he goes to his desk. He goes into his bag. He's looking through his bag. And I thought he was like looking for something to give to Matthew. He breaks out the Cowboys Super Bowl championship ring and says, here, Matthew, you can wear this in the picture.
Wow.
I mean, like, that's awesome. And then I took a picture with him as well. And Danny White, I even told him too. I said, man, you're one of the reasons why I'm a Cowboys fan. You know, I big fan growing up, you know, between Danny and, you know, Tony Dorsett, I just fell in love with that team. And, you know, it hasn't been all that great lately, but the Cowboys ended up winning the game. And it was a tremendous experience. It was a lot of fun. SoFi is gorgeous. That place is like a spaceship. It's unbelievable. It's really hard to get out of. But like, and we couldn't find where we were sitting because all the people that work there are new. And so they don't even know. Like you go up to an attendant and you're like, where is this?
Yeah, right. Right.
Let's see. Yeah, they're like looking at the seating map. But it was great. Stadium's awesome. And hopefully I'll get back there at some point. But the fact that the Cowboys won the game was the cherry on top there. So great experience. And Danny White was awesome.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. And it was probably hard to get out of there because all the Cowboys thought they were still in Dallas. All the Cowboy fans.
No.
It was a Cowboy home game from what I heard.
Oh my, there were so many Cowboys fans there. It was crazy. But the Chargers don't draw. Like, I mean, most of their fans are where? In San Diego.
Right.
So, you know, unless they come up and Cowboys fans are everywhere. It had to be like 2-1 Cowboys to Chargers fans. There was Cowboys fans everywhere.
All right. Okay. The Hall of Famer is with us, and that's great stuff there. Let's get on to the fantasy side of things. And if you're sitting here 2 weeks in, as we are right now, what are your big takeaways 2 weeks into this? Like, man, did I miss on this guy? And man, did we hit on that? Or Brad, it's the 49ers that can't keep a running back healthy. Or what are like a couple takeaways just early now for you?
So for one thing, and you know me, I'm never one to be afraid to be self-deprecating.
Yeah.
There's a couple of guys I have whiffed on. It's only 2 weeks. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I mean, what is going on? He's not getting the football enough. He didn't have a catch this past week. You would think that an Andy Reid offense would really support a running back of his talent. He was a first-round pick. Damian Williams was, like, really good for the Chiefs before they drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and it just hasn't worked out. From a fantasy perspective, I like the matchup this week against the Chargers, but still, he's been a disappointment. And then Brandon Ayuk, like, you want to talk about a guy whose fall from grace is as quick as I can ever remember any players. this was a player who was unbelievable last season through a 5 or 6 game stretch. He was putting up bananas numbers. Everybody loved him coming into the year. I don't know what happened. I know he had the hamstring. Something is going on behind the scenes. He's in Kyle Shanahan's doghouse. Debo Samuel is the number one wide receiver in San Francisco. And right now, Ayuk is a guy you drafted to be like your wide receiver 2 or flex. You can't even play him. Can't play him. Yeah. You just can't. So that's been a big whiff. And then there's a guy, and you remember last year how I was all high on Daniel Jones. I said, oh, he's going to be a sleeper.
Yep.
And it didn't work out. He's the QB4 after 2 weeks this season, and he's got Atlanta coming up. So sometimes, Brad, you are a year early on a player.
Right.
And apparently I was a year early on Daniel Jones, who suddenly, and he could be even ranked higher. Remember the game against Washington? Darius Slayton dropped the touchdown, and he had like a long run for a touchdown that got called back on a penalty. If those two plays don't happen, I mean, this guy's right there with Kyler Murray, which is crazy. It's Daniel Jones.
I'm really struck by what is going on with running backs, Fabs. I can't believe what's going on with the Raiders' backfield. I can't believe what's going on with the 49ers' backfield. You know, to say, okay, I got to decide about Peyton Barber, and even with the Giants and what's going on there, although it looks like things are starting to straighten out. But Devontae Booker, I'm seeing people roster him because they have to. And just sort me through the 49ers backfield, and where, because I got a ton of questions in the mailbag about the 49ers and Raiders running backs.
Everybody's hurt. Yeah. And that's the problem. So think about this, right? Back earlier in the year, Jeffrey Wilson Jr. got hurt. And so he was going to be out. And he's going to be out for several more weeks for the Niners. Then they lose Raheem Mostert. Okay, so he goes out for the year with a knee injury. And you got Elijah Mitchell, who looks really good against the Lions. And this past week, not as great against the Eagles. But he did get the lion's share of the snaps and the touches. He got hurt this week, too. He had the shoulder, but he came back in. Trey Sermon, who everyone in the fantasy industry loved, thought he was going to be the guy, was inactive in week 1. And then last week had 1 carry and got hurt, concussion. Jamichael Hasty has a high ankle sprain. They brought in Duke Johnson and Lamar Miller for workouts. Like, that's how bad it is right now for the Niners. So the good news is that if you eliminate Hasty from the mix, we already know Mostert's out. We know Wilson's not going to be back for a while. Mitchell's going to be a pretty good RB2 flex this week for the 49ers against the Packers, who you can run the football on. Mm-hmm. So that's that situation. Mitchell's going to be the guy in service. Las Vegas, almost at Oakland, Josh Jacobs is hurt. And he's highly questionable for this week, which means you're probably going to see another Kenyon Drake and Peyton Barber mix. And Gruden was good to his word, right? What did he say last week? Kenyon Drake's role is not going to change. And Peyton Barber played the Josh Jacobs role. He's just not that good. And so he had double-digit carries, and Drake was using the passing game. Now, Drake has got the revenge game factor this week against Miami. He's the Raiders running back to play, but it's not like we have a lot of faith in Kenyon Drake putting up big time numbers, but Devin Singletary just absolutely shredded that Miami defense a week ago. So Drake is certainly going to be on the radar as a flex this week, because I do feel like the revenge game factor is going to be motivation for him. And the matchup looks like it's pretty good, but yeah, some of these backfields. And I think another thing you have to remember too, Brad, 17 games this season, 17.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see Tony Pollard come in there, and basically equal or have increased carries and touches over Zeke Elliott, like, you can't shake your head and be like, oh, this is going to be a committee. All these teams have to keep these running backs at least somewhat fresh for the stretch run. Like, you saw Derrick Henry go bananas this past week, and, you know, he had way over 30 carries. But ultimately, there are going to be games where these top backs, in situations where maybe their team is out of it, or another back behind them is just hot, like Pollard was against the Chargers, that some of these starters are not going to see as many touches. So I wouldn't be too surprised at it. We're going to see more and more committee situations in the National Football League. And we already have started to see that. Baltimore has been one with Tyson Williams and Latavius Murray. And the Cardinals have one. It's just that James Conner has not looked all that great. He's not effective when he has the ball in his hands. I just wish they would give the ball to Chase Edmonds a little bit more often. And I like Edmonds this week. The Cardinals, pretty good matchup. What do you think? Against the Jags? I mean, not bad, right?
Not bad, but I will tell you this, Fabs. I think that this is a bit of a trap game, because 10 a.m. start, going from west to east. You know what happens with some teams. Yeah. And then they have the Rams and 49ers the 2 weeks after. And so they're sitting there at 2-0. They should be 1-1. We all would agree on that. But yeah, you're going to Jacksonville. You should roll up big numbers. And so I think that's a little bit of a trap.
Kyler, my goodness gracious, he's going bananas.
He's unbelievable. I want to give you a pat on the back or a pat on the head, however you want to take it. So Fabs is in this business where he comes on with me and he's on Sirius XM and he's on with Sports Illustrated and he's a national figure and a Hall of Famer. So when something doesn't go right, people are like, oh, you said this and you said that. Fabs said back in August, Daryl Henderson's going to get hurt. Just so you know, it's going to happen. So here we are. Is Sony Michel a must play this week?
Well, look at the matchup. They're playing Tampa. So, like, from a volume perspective, yeah. Like, if the Rams get down inside the red zone, and we're assuming Henderson's out. We don't know yet for sure. We don't know yet.
He might play. It's a rib injury, right? Rib injury.
He's got the – he's always hurt. Always, always, always. Like, that – you know, I think I may have said it on your show, or maybe I said it on my show. The second he puts together a couple of good lines, trade him. He's always hurt. Like, that's why the Rams traded for Michel, because they're afraid that Henderson's going to get hurt. Yeah. And guess what happens, Brad? It didn't even take two games and he's hurt. So, like, Michel is a volume play if Henderson's out, mind you, because they don't have too much. I mean, you're looking at Jake Funk, right? I mean, behind him on the depth chart, there's not much going on there. So volume, yes, Michel is worth a look if Henderson is out. And if Henderson's active this week, I wouldn't play him. And I know you're probably thinking, are you crazy? He's been really good. Buccaneers.
Yeah.
Okay. Buccaneers. Like, the Bears defense is not that good. All right. The Bears defense in week one, not that good. And then they played the Colts. Their defense is shot full of injuries. This is the Bucs. So if Henderson plays, horrible matchup, not 100%. Beware.
Bad combination. Antonio Brown. Where are you at on him? Because if you're looking at the Bucs, I got some notes here as I've been watching with Gronk having a great season.
Crazy.
Yeah, I know. And so you look at the receiving core down there with Mike Evans. Where are you at on Antonio Brown?
Here's the thing. In week one, he ended up being a stud, right? Godwin had a big game. Evans didn't. I almost felt like they self-corrected to Evans getting the ball this past week against Atlanta. But now you got the Rams. Mm-hmm. So does Jalen Ramsey cover one of these guys in particular? Is it Evans? I mean, is it AB? I don't know that he's going to go into the slot and cover Godwin, but he might, right? And so that's where I need to do a little bit of research. In a non-Rams matchup week, you're starting all three.
Yep.
And you're probably starting all three regardless this week, right? Because at any time, any one of these three guys can blow up, right? AB imploded last week. He didn't have much in terms of targets, and he didn't get it. He didn't get the stats that you were hoping for, but Evans didn't. Godwin was good again. So I think Godwin's going to be the most reliable player out of the trio. And then AB and Mike Evans are probably going to end up 1 week. It'll be AB. Another week, it'll be Evans. And then the next week, it'll be Evans. Then the next week, it'll be AB. It's going to be hard to really decipher who's going to be the top wide receiver, I think, beyond Chris Godwin, who I would start week in and week out. But this week's going to be very interesting. I got to do some research, still working on Stardom and Sit'em for the week.
Yeah.
But if Jalen Ramsey is going to shadow one of those players, that's going to be a tough matchup for whoever gets that shadow treatment. But we will find out here at the end of the week. Make sure you check out si.com/fantasy. Stardom and Sit'em will go up tomorrow. So that'll be must read internet. Is that what it would be? If it's not must-see TV, it would be must-read internet, right? Is that how it works?
Or must-watch.
There you go.
You do some of that, too, on the site. Yeah. Streaming defenses. This is a strategy question. I had a few of these. Are you big on streaming defenses now with the way fantasy is progressed?
Yep. Because I never draft a defense until, like, one of my last two or three picks.
Right.
And so there's a couple of leagues where, like, I have the Steelers. And, you know, I have, maybe the Niners or something like that. And, like, I'll play them every week. But do I want to play the Niners against Green Bay this week? Pittsburgh looked like garbage against the Raiders, right? So, like, they've got the Bengals, so I'm still going to play them. Great streaming option this week, Brad. Great. And they're definitely on the waiver wire. Carolina Panthers. Mm-hmm. They're playing Davis Mills and the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
The Texans are a dumpster fire. And without Tyrod Taylor, the fire is even bigger at this point in that offense. So pick up the Panthers defense on the waiver wire and stream them on Thursday night.
Let you go off that. Good stuff as always. And congratulations on your life moment with Danny White.
That was great, man. And hey, you know what? I got to talk to Danny about you. And Danny was, he was just gracious. Really, really great guy. Hopefully I can get him on my show at some point here. I think I'm going to text him because you know what was weird? I told Danny, I was like, you know, I have your phone number. And he said, really? I'm like, yeah, Brad gave it to me. And he goes, well, if Brad gave it to you, then it must be okay. Yeah. See, you got a good rep, Sesmatt.
When you get over here, we'll find a way for the three of us to go play golf. If you play golf with Danny White, you have to play ready golf. You cannot sit there and analyze. He is one of these dudes that,
no,
let's go.
I'm ready.
Don't get your phone out. Just we're here to play golf, and that's how he is. So
love it.
Make it happen. See ya.
That'd be great. All right, pal.
There's Fabs with us, the Hall of Famer, and we're back with more. Make sure you find all of this content, by the way, over on SiriusXM and at SportsIllustratedSI.com. Back with more after this timeout.